broadcasting from Hollywood, California, it's Grant's Rants, Hollywood Talk.
Hollywood fears and other writers strike on the horizon. We examine the Real Housewives of BH and NYC. Janet Jackson splits from her husband, and Abby Lee Miller splits from her show. We look at the Amazon pilot, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and have a deep TV discussion with Isabel Carrasso here. Let the ranting begin. I'm sitting across from writer, improv comedian, and NBC page, Isabel Carrasso.
Hi.
Hey. We work together, or we did work together,
yes,
at NBC, and we connected over our love for Unscripted.
Yes, probably mostly The Real Housewives.
Of course.
Because you don't like Kardashians.
No, I can't. Yeah,
They made me watch a lot of that. But, yeah, The Real Housewives were what we bonded on and talked about briefly in between.
Yeah. Well, Isabel, to explain what you did. So there's this app that's not in the States.
It's, okay, so here's the pitch for Hey You. I don't work there anymore, so I'm not plugging it, but it's great if you want it. Okay, so it's basically every English-speaking reality show broadcasted to the UK, Australia, and any other country, really, that speaks English.
Yeah.
And so it's like all the Kardashians, all the housewives, including the housewives abroad in Melbourne and, you know, Canada, which I think is hilarious because I can't picture any Canadian being rude to other people. So, yeah, so I wrote BuzzFeed-style articles for them and made also BuzzFeed style videos for them, and it was super fun. Just kind of goofy things, mm-hmm, like
Isabel, you're responsible for a lot of the GIFs that
yes,
people share. You create
yes,
a lot of the housewives GIFs.
I make GIFs. That's great. Any of the funny moments where they throw things or they yell or they have great phrasing of words, I, you know, edit those
yes,
for all of you lovely people to share on Twitter.
Yeah.
So
we bonded over that, and then Isabel moved on to the NBC Page program earlier this year, but we've been in touch,
mm-hmm,
and I said it was time to do a show, so here we are.
Here we are.
Yes. So let's talk about this upcoming, perhaps, threat of a WGA writer's strike again.
I'm concerned, but
really?
I think it has to happen because so we've come so far in the last 10 years. The last strike was around 2007.
Seven, yeah.
So just think about what has changed online in that time, like how differently we watch TV. It's pretty much, I mean, all my friends watch it online. We're cord cutters. So
yeah,
we have Hulu, yeah, Netflix, Amazon Prime, like all of that stuff. And we don't really care for watching cable or live anymore.
Yeah.
You know, but
it's the cable companies too that outprice everyone. People
yeah,
who are starting out or college students or, you know, their first job, they can't afford to get 800 channels to get just to watch Bravo and you know,
yeah,
E. I mean, it's ridiculous.
And
so they do it to themselves.
It's funny too, at NBC, all of our bosses push, you know, you guys should get Comcast. That's our parent
yeah,
company, you know, and it's like, sorry, we can't afford $80
yeah,
a month to pay
for
it.
I don't think you can even get it here.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
That's the other annoying.
Yeah.
Anyway, but so it's like no one knows how to price things. That's Netflix's big issue, is they don't know how to pay people the proper rate because there is no going rate for what you pay a writer for online streaming stuff.
Right.
So it's like how they have to make up a number that seems fair to writers, that's comparable to network rates, and it's, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I hope that the writers get what they're asking for, and I think it's good that they'll strike, but it's bad for literally everyone else in the industry that needs to work.
Right. The only thing positive that came out of the 07 writers' strike was it elevated a lot of writers who came in as scabs and then were able to prove themselves and
right,
got good positions that would have taken them probably 10 more years to get into
yeah,
some of these roles. But, I mean, you know, the threat is looming, and it's turning kind of ugly. The negotiations already fell through once. And, you know, now there's a lot of, well, what's going to happen if this happens? What's going to happen if the strike occurs?
Because we're in the golden age, everyone says, of television. So it's like, okay, what is this going to do to it? Are we going to be set back? Or is, you know, another media giant going to pop up from this while, you know, we're scrambling to figure out what to do? Or, you know, is it not going to be affected? Like, we thought the stock market was going to crash when Trump became president, and that didn't happen. So maybe, I don't know how much it's, I think it will affect it, but I don't know how much it'll affect it.
Right.
Just because there's so many streaming channels and so many people want to write and a lot of, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see.
Well, the negotiations, to your point, are with the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. Now, that group is not associated with an Amazon original series or Netflix. So those guys should be pretty unaffected because they can roll out a new series tonight if they want, you know, like whenever they want.
Yeah.
So it's, to them, if they're just, if they don't have the episodes to release, then they just push the date versus these, of course, upfronts, full TV. And that's what could be affected. But as of now, the shows that are in production or will be in production through the summer, that they're saying could fall into this category of being affected are American Horror Story, that CBS All Access show Star Trek Discovery,
I don't know.
HBO's Divorce, who cares? And Zoo. I mean, you know, it's so it's like, you know, these aren't major, you know, we're not talking like, you know, the number one show on TV here, but, you know, so those are shows that are all currently in production. And there's a lot of other stuff, like the soaps, they're saying they're starting to can and like keep episodes, like, you know, on the side just in case, and late night would really much be affected.
Late night's the big one.
Yeah.
The big one that's going to be affected, and a lot of those shows are NBC, too, so it's going to, you know, and we're already slipping to Stephen Colbert's on CBS, so that's going to be pretty terrible if all of our late night stuff. SNL is going to be affected too, and they've been doing so much, you know,
really well.
Great political commentary, hilarious little sketches. Not little sketches, they're great. But but I don't know. It's going to be really scary, and I hope they come to an agreement before. But, you know, my department at work has just said, you know, we're on the network side, and it's hard because they're kind of caught in the middle because they work with writers and they do all the contracts and they do all that stuff, but it's like they're responsible to the network first and then the show.
Right.
So it's kind of terrible.
That's a tough space to be in.
I wish I wish this wasn't happening.
Well, it's all about money, of course. The decline in cable series pay is a problem. You know, people are just getting paid as much as they were in the past. I mean, rating a hit cable show on E doesn't get huge numbers necessarily. It does well in the overall average, but I mean, it's like not enough to justify major pay, you know, pay salaries. And then, of course, healthcare. Of course, that falls into it. They're saying that in the next 4 years, they could hit a $140 million deficit.
Oh my God.
So it's like all money, of course.
Yeah.
What
I'm just so sad because, you know, a lot of people want to be writers one day. I want to be a writer one day. And it'd be nice to have healthcare and it'd be nice to be paid, you know, a decent salary. But, you know, writers are being – I mean, I'm fresh out of college, so I have a different perspective of what good money is because I'm not making great money right now.
Right.
But it's like – it feels like a privilege to be able to write on a show. But, it, you know, it shouldn't be a privilege to have healthcare. So that's where I'm divided on the whole issue, you know?
Yeah.
And it's very frustrating because they're not asking for anything insane. It's just, hey, maybe pay us properly based on the advertisements and the advertising rate for streaming services. And it's just – no one knows how to do that. And maybe it's going to come from Silicon Valley where they figure, okay, for each minute, it's this percentage of this and this. And,
you
know,
I
think it needs to come from an outsider because we're all so obsessed with the numbers here. And if someone in Silicon Valley figures out, you know, an algorithm, oh, for each 100 viewers, you get this penny or this whatever. So I think it's going to come from an outsider. And Silicon Valley is very obsessed with Hollywood and how we do everything and, like, because it's, you know, this kind of unknown entity to them. But
yeah,
I think
that's a good idea. I think that would hold a lot of weight.
I think it'll come from them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
That's what I feel.
But you mentioned ad dollars. So the WGA West exec director, David Young, sent a letter out to ad buyers. This is where I think it gets gross. You know, it warns them that they could be wasting their money come up fronts because the writer's strike could really much happen. And he's urging the strike. He's urging people to go that way in that direction. So, I mean, I just think it's kind of tacky to send this letter.
Oh, it's such a power play, too. Yeah. And such, like, a mic drop that we don't know how much weight it holds, either.
That's
like,
true. You know, are they going to respond to this or just roll their eyes?
I don't know. I feel like everyone doesn't really think it's going to happen.
I kind of don't. I really kind of don't.
I can't tell anymore. Yeah. In this weird world we live in, the rules are thrown out. So
that's true. You know, they, like I mentioned, they felt there once. They're going to resume discussions on April 10th, which is right tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Cool.
So they have until May 1st. So
I
get to work.
I think they'll reach an agreement.
Yeah, I think they will.
Because there's so much at stake. There are so many shows being written. And, you know, writers' rooms are going on right now. You know, for like a lot of NBC shows, and yeah, it's like, what's, you know, you can't afford that on
right
network.
Yeah, exactly.
To lose all of your writing staff, that's insane.
Ugh. Well, we wish them luck, I guess. Rich people problems in so many ways, but
yeah.
Yes, but also, I mean, it hinges on so much. I mean, it's
all the crew that's going to be affected,
right.
And it, just all the below the line people are going to be the most hurt from it if they do strike, which is very unfortunate.
It's true. Well, let's look at something unscripted.
Yes.
Completely.
No writers involved.
Yes, no writers involved. The Real Housewives. I want to get your thoughts on the finale of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. There was fight after fight on that show.
Yeah.
Lisa Rinna just took one after the next. Eden spoke up for the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And PK showed up.
Yeah. Okay, so I took some notes on this because there was a lot going on. First of all, I want a supercut of Kyle Richards' face whenever people are arguing around her, because it was so priceless. Every single time someone said anything, it was just a zoop or like a frown, or like, it was so funny just to watch her watching people
Very
argue.
Expressive, yeah.
So expensive. Expressive.
My grandmother says that she'll turn to the person, like, dramatic, like back
yeah,
and forth, like,
exactly,
like a ping pong mat.
Yeah. It felt very staged, all the women, because it was like, okay, you know, Lisa Rinna confronts this woman, then this woman confronts this one.
You all were in a circle.
I'm sorry I can't name names, because it was like everyone had a different you to you, confrontation.
Yeah.
And just they were all in a circle the entire time, and they were all like, I don't know, they were all like away from the party, and it felt very like it was on a set,
here we go. Like, this is where you're gonna have a scene over here.
Totally.
You know, yeah. And then even Erica got up from the table and was like, oh, that's my cue.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
there was this funny little scene where PK's husband walks by the camera. I thought that was the funniest thing.
What do you make of his involvement?
I said this earlier, but I love him because of his accent, because he sounds like Ricky Gervais, so everything he says to me is instantly hilarious. And, I mean, I don't think he should be involved with the women. It always feels weird when a man is there, because it's the women, the Real Housewives, you know?
Right.
And when their husbands get involved, it doesn't feel like a fair fight to me. You know, they're so good at articulating why they're angry at someone. And if you bring in a husband who also is articulating, it's not fair. You're ganging up on someone.
Right.
And everyone also unnecessarily hates Erica. I love Erica.
Yeah, I like
and
Erica.
I think, like, she had a funny comment where she was like, Lisa Vanderpump's obsessed with me, you know? And I think everyone's just obsessed with her because she has this double life that they all want, but they can't have, you know?
Yeah, I thought that it was ridiculous that PK was involved, and I'll never be convinced otherwise that he just wants to be on camera.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
totally
so obvious to me. He was looking for any in to get in there. Of course, people would argue, well, Erica called him out, and Erica said, you know, why did you say this about me? And, like, all that. But, you know, he was there and readily available and vying for attention. It was like a dog at your feet. It's like, at some point, you're going to acknowledge this dog. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I was like, ugh, PK, I can't with him.
Yeah.
So.
I also thought the whole underwear scandal that they named Pantygate went on for way too long. And it was funny because, you know, whenever shows name drop the name of the show or whatever, I'm always like, yay! You know, that it's just like a fun thing to hear. And so when they said Pantygate, which was like one of the first few episodes of the season, I was like, yes, you name dropped it.
And they brought it back.
And they brought it back, yeah. But it was like so drawn out. And I feel like they have enough drama between all of them. They don't need to keep bringing up this one small.
I know.
That like carried this whole season.
It was the root of all the problems.
Yeah, and it was ridiculous too.
Especially when like Erica runs around and like has like, even Lisa Vanderpump said, like you wear the C word around your neck. Like you're, like, you know, her video, how many F's? She's like literally like her hands like between her legs. Like it's not like she's some conservative.
No.
So it's like, you know. You know, you put it out there.
Yeah.
You know, you make it seem accessible, unfortunately. I mean, but, you know, but that's also, people have to differentiate the character versus the person. Who do you think needs to leave? Or should they keep them all for next season?
Oh, I hate PK. I just want her to go.
Oh, you mean Dorit?
Dorit, yeah.
Yes.
Why does she go by PK?
Well, PK's the husband.
Oh, he needs to go. They both need to go. I'm sorry. I don't like the duo. I was not happy when they brought them in. I don't know what her accent is. And I know her little, you know, opening thing is, when you travel the world, you can speak with any accent you want. And I was like, no, you cannot do that. You cannot put on this weird kind of half British, half slurring your speech accent. It was bizarre to me.
No, I'm wondering what's left for her that will anchor her into a second season. Like, have we told her story? Like, what's left, you know?
I don't care about her story, though, at all. And it felt like they were grasping as, you know, just like, she had nothing to offer, so they put in this underwear scandal to carry her through the season and connect her to all the women. And I just didn't buy it. I'm not a fan of her at all. I like Kim and Kyle. I like the duo together.
Right.
I also liked Frasier's wife.
What's Camille. Her name?
Camille.
My favorite.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love her. I loved her storyline. I liked the divorce. You know, that's always nice to see on TV because, you know, you see the fun side of them traveling, going on vacation, but it's nice to see them anchored in reality, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what happened with Camille big time. She's humbled completely since then, her health problems. But yeah, I mean, talk about someone who's really made a character arc, you know, change over the short time that she's been in and out of the show. Yeah, I think that they could all potentially come back next season. You know, the ratings for the finale were just barely under a 2, which is pretty good for Bravo, you know, in a finale. So I'm thinking, you know, that that's all right. They should bring them all back.
They had everyone there for that party, which was really cool.
Yeah.
Or most of everyone, right? Was it everyone?
Well, I mean, the whole cast and then Camille.
Yeah.
But like, you know, like we didn't see like Adrian or like too many former ones, but there are some former ones we just don't need to see.
No.
So I was glad to see like who was there. They were well represented.
I like Camille.
Yeah.
I enjoyed her on the show. She felt very real to me.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about Real Housewives of New York City. One show is leaving, another show is coming on. We've got New York for the next, like, 9 months. we, you know, the first episode has aired at the time of us recording this podcast. And so I want to get your thoughts. You know, Luann's fiancé is right back front and center, burner storyline.
Tom. I feel like I've heard Tom. That's how she says it. It's like, you know, Tom and I. And it's just so sad because I feel like every girl has had a friend who is just dating kind of a scum bag. And you're just kind of like, what are you doing? We've explained why he's bad for you. We've all seen him cheat on you. We've told you that. We've had conversations. We had the meltdown in Miami. And then it's like you're still with him. And it's, you know, I don't know if she likes the drama or she's just sadly getting too old. And like, this is it.
Yeah. Why is a woman of her age who's already been married, so obsessed with getting remarried?
I don't know.
You know, what's the benefit? I feel like at that point, you can still live together. You can still share finances. What do you need to be married and all tied up for?
Maybe she wants the party.
Probably.
She really was obsessed with her first husband's identity because she was the countess. Yeah. But I don't even know what Tom has to offer, you know? He's just kind of this sleazy guy, like, hanging. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of him. I don't think anyone on the show is. And it's like, it creates so much friction in the group if you don't like one of your friend's boyfriends.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what's going on.
Well, the same thing happens with Dorinda and her boyfriend, who's a real creep, in my opinion, worse than Tom. Like, if I had to choose, you know.
Really?
Yeah. So this one, you know, I don't know. But I will say, Tom, I like Tom's penthouse. I would live in that. That was great.
I mean, maybe that's the draw. You know, New York is expensive. Maybe she's just living in the house for that. Because who was it? One of them was having difficulty, you know, should I leave my house? Should I get a two-bedroom? My daughter's off.
Oh, yeah. Sonia.
Yeah, Sonia is, like, trying to deal with that. And they were kind of joking, like, you know, maybe go find another Tom to go live in their penthouse.
Yeah. Carol is having a conversation, it looks like next week, with Ramona. And she talked about it this week, how her stance on Hillary versus Trump.
Oh, I'm so into all of that stuff. I think more show, like, you know, Real Housewives is an escape from every day, but they're in New York where there's Trump Tower and there's and you know, Hillary, you know, used to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there's all this tension around New York City. And I think it's great that they were talking about it, but Bethany kept shutting her down. Like, stop talking about it. Don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. She's like, I used to be a reporter. I can't not think about this kind of stuff. And I think it's good that they brought it up too, because probably a lot of those women, I don't know what their political stances are, but I mean, they have a lot of money, so you can kind of assume some of them may have voted for him based on tax, you know?
Yeah.
They want tax breaks.
And circles of people they're involved with.
Totally. But I think it's really great that someone was bringing up, this is not okay. And it's just nice to hear. And, you know, a lot of women watch the show, and not to get super political, but a lot of white women were the reason that Trump won. And so it's maybe, I don't know, it's kind of nice to hear someone saying, you know, he's a bad guy, we should think about this.
Right.
They aired the show a little late for that, but.
I know, she's like, Hillary's going to win in a landslide. I was like, oh, this poor girl.
It hurts.
I'm like, to hear what she's going to have to go through, when it doesn't happen for her.
Ugh.
I know, I hate to see that, because we all, well, not all, but, like, you know, a lot of people were very much in that boat,
totally,
where they just assumed this was going to be the direction that it was going to go in. And, you know, because when you do live in bubbles like that, I guess, like, to me, the bubbles are a lot larger than these smaller conservative bubbles.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, like that, especially living in New York, living in the middle of LA, like, it's like, we didn't see any signs for Trump around here. I think there was a hot dog stand on Fairfax that had one sign for Trump.
I think I saw that too. And that was it.
That was it.
And, like, you know, it is a bubble, but.
But there's a lot of us here, and there's a lot of people here that have, you know, specific education and income level, and, you know, so it's just, you know, it's what we know, you know, so it's just, who the hell knows, but I mean, it's all said and done with now, but I just think as housewives go, it's interesting to have that conversation.
Totally.
Because it's usually so, like, we just want Pantygate, a woman didn't wear underpants to a party, and it went on for 18 episodes.
Yeah, and so it's refreshing to hear them discuss, you know, real. I think that's my biggest issue with the Real Housewives franchise, is where is their fun downtime? You know, like, let me see them eating pizza together and talking about, you know, whatever. There's no downtime there. And I feel like that would ground me more. And I think the New York ones really do that. They're just sitting around on the couch, you know, hanging out.
Hang out in New York.
I like that a lot. And that's when they started talking about politics. It wasn't like at a crazy soiree. It was just them hanging out, you know, talking, you know, this person's going to sell their house. I'm doing this with my life now, my house, you know, whatever. But then they bring up politics, because that's what comes up when you're talking with your friends in your home, you know?
Exactly.
So I like their downtime. It feels very real, even though, you know, how real is it? But I like it.
Yes.
I like it.
Well, for the real to a reality for Janet Jackson, she is splitting from her billionaire husband, apparently.
Ugh.
Page Six surprised me with this information. And, so she's apparently splitting. There are two reports. One, that they're amicably splitting.
Uh-huh.
And the second is really juicy. It's like what I kind of had assumed. It's the fact that, well, not the fact, the allegedly, that he's controlling her, that he controlled the pregnancy, her image, how she's seen publicly in her music videos, how she's seen dressed at her concerts.
Yeah.
Also, apparently, he wanted her to not be seen nursing.
Mm.
You know, apparently, it's steeped in Muslim tradition that he keeps her kind of behind closed doors.
Oh.
And, like, Janet, you know, famous for her CBS malfunction. Yeah. So it's like kind of like funny that like out of all the people, she's going to be the one that we're going to keep hidden.
It's like he picked the worst person to marry if that's his one stance.
Do you realize like her biggest scandal is
that's
her?
What I know her from as a kid. I was like, okay, first nip slip and then, you know.
Yes, the star on the boob.
Yeah, yes. That was it.
So in 2014, she had her concert, and she was notoriously covered up, like not at all how people expected Janet to be. And a lot of that is related to him and how he's been, you know, really encouraging her to live a quiet life. Remember, there was that whole scandal about where's Janet, where no one's seen Janet in like, it's been like 400 days or something. And so, like, you know, that's apparently all on him. So Katherine Jackson had this whole thing with elder abuse. All these allegations that, you know, they have a key to her bedroom and they were taking her money and she was very uncomfortable. So she flew out to London to stay with Janet for 2 months. When she left, that's when apparently the romance or the marriage ended.
I don't think any divorce is amicable, even though they say it. Like, that, I don't know. Marriage is such an intense thing. Like, you're legally binding yourself to this person. I don't think it's amicable ever. And I think that's kind of a BS thing to say. But I don't know. Like, maybe they don't want trouble.
I think it's rare. Like, for just to have people be divorced and be friends. I'd be like, you know what? Because, like, you know, at what point are you like, this really, it's either really not working to the point of divorce, or it's like, meh, and you just stay married. Yeah. It's easier to. So, yeah, you have a point there.
Also, if she, I don't know her personally, of course, but she seems like a very dramatic person based on her stage presence. Yeah. I don't think she'd be having a chill divorce, you know? Right. I think it'd be a bigger blowout. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. There's billions of dollars involved, too. You know, Janet, I don't know what to say about her, but she just had that kid. Like, she was pregnant for like a year and a half and finally had
the
kid.
She was pregnant for a year and a half.
She was pregnant forever. Yeah. At 50, she gave birth. And apparently, according to the article on Page Six, said that was supposed to help things. Well, I mean, anybody knows that
a child fixes every marriage.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I don't know. They said there's no word on whether they have a prenup.
I hope if that much money's that's okay, if they didn't sign a prenup and he's that dumb, then she deserves that money, you know? Like,
that's insane.
That's so insane.
Yes. So, Janet, good luck to you moving forward. Yes. Someone who needs a hell of a lot of luck, Abby Lee Miller.
Oh, love her.
So, like, this woman is like a human roach. You just can't get rid of her.
She's in trouble.
I can't stand this woman, but I love to hear her.
Yeah.
She's a mess. So, this dance mom on the show, a mom, I guess, says dance mom star, I don't know who the hell it is.
Yeah.
Sari Lopez. She said that Miller quit because the show was fake and false, and she wanted more creative control and creative credit that the producers would not give to her. And, you know, she was insulted because she had done it for so long. And she said that the show was forced and staged by producers, and that's why Abby quit. And I guess now Cheryl Burke is taking over the show.
Well, I'm not going to watch it if it's not Abby Lee, you know?
Yeah.
I think, I mean, I buy that just because, you know, you never know how real reality is. And if she is an artist with a strong personality, I could see her being fed up with, you know, not being given artistic credit for these dances that win competitions. And I could see her just being fed up with the moms because they were in. So I used to babysit for this girl and I got so into Dance Moms for a few years. And like, well, after I stopped babysitting her, I would still keep up with it. And I was obsessed with all the drama, but it was like, there's no way this is real. There's no way you would keep going. No mom has the energy to raise a daughter and fight with her, you know, daughter's dance teacher every week or multiple times a week because they're so involved in dance. There's no way. Yeah. There's no way that's real.
The show took an evolution too. Like, it started off as like, you know, they would the pyramid and they would give their, and now it's all about the competitions and this like miniatures or something.
Oh yeah,
it's
the
like,
minis.
I don't know what the hell it is, but I mean, ridiculous. So she's saying that the network even fined her for her not following production's direction. Mm-hmm. So that would add insult to injury, especially if you want to receive some type of creative control.
Yes.
And now she's rumored to take all of her favorites. Not, I don't know if it's the minis or somebody.
The minis.
She's supposed to take her favorites to a rival network, which I don't see how any of that's possible. Because if
network?
Someone's involved, and one of those girls or Abby herself, well, all of them have to be involved in a Do Not Compete.
Yeah.
It's just like this. Right. They do not compete for the smallest things.
Totally.
For a hit show like that, all these contracts in, it's definitely something. So I don't know if I believe that.
Yeah.
So she told People magazine about her legal status, that she's made mistakes and she listened to, you know, people she trusted. Mm-hmm. And now she's taking responsibility. And Abby has a hearing on May 8th where she can face 2.5 years in prison.
For tax evasion.
Yeah. Hiding money and all this stuff. So big things happening by May, you know, the WGA.
Yes.
And now Abby Lee.
It's just so dumb. It's one thing if, you know, you're a whatever, you know, you have a whatever job, very normal person, and you I'm not even advocating for tax evasion here, but this is what it's going to sound like. I'm just saying, like, if you're such a high-profile person, why would you hide money? Why would you not report it? It seems like you're just asking for trouble there. You know right. what I mean?
Yeah.
What? You're on a hit show. You're really going to hide money from the peak of your show? Are you kidding?
That's what they said. Like, someone watched the show and they said, there's no way this woman doesn't have money. She's been doing this show for multiple seasons.
So it's the thing with Janet Jackson's husband, too. If you're that dumb with your money, maybe you deserve what you get. You know what
right.
I mean? Like,
yeah, we talked about it on this show. She even called up her lawyers and said, we need to find a way to make money for the both of us and keep me out of jail. So I'm paraphrasing, but something like that. But I mean, she, you know.
I would love it if that was the direct phrasing.
Oh, well, she did say keep me out of jail.
Yeah.
She did say, like, that was a part of it. But I mean, yes, that was direct. But Abby Lee, I don't know. I mean, this woman is definitely, in my opinion, going to do time. And she's no one to blame for herself. But herself, you know, I mean, she had such a good thing. She opens up her LA studio. Mm-hmm. It's a shame. You know, these people, they really create their own problems.
Yeah.
You know, they really do. When we come back, we're going to be discussing the Amazon pilots that have been released online. We looked at one that really caught our attention, so we're going to discuss that. And we're going to get to know Isabel a little bit more and talk about her career path and goals. And she's got interesting stories, so stay tuned.
You're listening to Grant's Rants. Please rate, subscribe, and share. Spread the word. There are a lot more rants to come. Listen anytime on all major podcasting platforms and YouTube for bonus content. And now, back to the show.
And we're back talking with Isabel Carrasso, and we're going to be talking about these Amazon pilots that have been released. So Amazon releases the latest pilots. So what do they do?
So they kind of... What we think, what they've told us, is that they leave it up to the public, you know, to watch these pilots, vote on them. I don't know how much control we actually have, but I think that they're, you know, considering social media buzz and, you know, the following and what people are saying or talking about. So I want this show to get picked up. I think it will. But
we're talking about Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And you can see this for free over on Amazon.com/pilots.
Yes.
And it's a great show. It's like, I think it's like 56 minutes mm-hmm. long. Very well done. Very smart. Good pacing. A lot of character.
From the creator of Gilmore Girls, Amy Sherman Palladino. So I'll support anything she does pretty much. But this is like, I think, her strongest show, you know, most well done. It has a bigger budget than Gilmore did, and it's just like not that I'm an expert on this, but I feel like she grew a ton as a writer and as a director, and, you know, just as a creator. This show has so much growth from Gilmore Girls, which is just this tiny town. This is like, you know, New York 1950s, all these comedians she's named. It's so engaging and different. I think that's like the biggest thing, is it's different. I haven't seen this.
Right. Yeah. So it's about a housewife in the 50s. Or
yeah,
right?
Yeah. 50s.
I mean, this woman is like, you know, the model wife. The husband doesn't really appreciate her, as we find out along the way.
Yeah.
And her husband are in the stand-up comedy scene, and she finds an opportunity and
to rant on stage, and it becomes her bit. She does like a comedic bit, and everyone loves it, and it's great comedy what she does. Like, in those days, you know, talking smack on people was just, you know, shocking, you know, and you see that on like all the other comedians who are doing their own you know, stand up, like, that's shocking. And so this was like one step further shocking. But I mean, if I saw that on stage today, I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And it's, I think this is a cool take on shows about comedians. Cause you know, you have Louis, you have, all the other, you know, the male centric comedian who's trying to do, you know, the Pete
baskets.
Holmes. Pete Holmes, mm-hmm. the show about themselves, essentially trying to make it as a stand up. Seinfeld's great, so I'm excluding that. And Louis's great. But I feel like there's a slew of male comedians having shows about their lives, trying to make it as comedians, whatever.
Oh, okay. You're
but
saying,
I'm saying this is just like so, you know, subverting that genre and just doing its own thing. And it's so fresh and I love it so much. Mm-hmm. I really want everyone to watch it and talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, you can watch it for free. So this, there was an article on Slate.com, which was a little like, what's the word I'm thinking of? Like, like, I don't know, it was a little like negative, but they were questioning, like we were, you know, how much Amazon really takes into account these reviews and people sharing this episode and looking at the pilots and selecting which ones get picked up. They said basically, you know, they're a content company now, they just pick what they want and, you know, if people are checking for it or not, they're going to make it. And, you know, I mean, that's definitely within their right. I mean, why not? So they said, according to this article on Slate, they said, Amazon put five new pilots online. Budding Prospects, a half-hour comedy based on a T.C. Boyle novel. The Legend of Master Legend, about a middle-aged man who dresses up as a superhero. Oasis, a sci-fi drama. And last but certainly not least, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Amy Sherman Palladino's hour-long period dramedy, about a Jewish housewife who becomes a stand-up comedian. And then they cite this potential animated series, like the VIPs or something.
Yeah.
The new VIPs or something like that. Yeah, the new VIPs, which I have no interest in anything like that. So to me, the one show that I would naturally select would be the Mrs. Maisel, and that's what you brought to my attention, and I'm so glad you did.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I mean, New York is in your heart, so you should watch shows about New York. But the only issue with Amazon, I love their content, you know, their original stuff is great, but they totally favor male showrunners to female showrunners.
Oh, really?
So like Woody Allen's, you know, A Tragedy in Six Scenes. Is that what it was called?
I believe so.
You can correct me if I'm wrong. Sorry if I'm wrong. But, like, his series was picked up straight to Amazon. And, I mean, of course, it's Woody Allen. Like, he does good stuff. But, you know, good content stuff. But he, like, and then Jill Soloway pitched her own show. And she was, you know, the creator of Transparent. Yeah. And she had to do it as a pilot. Like, it, that didn't get picked up. And that's insane to me.
That is insulting. Yeah.
Total. And it's, like, the same thing with this episode of Marvelous Miss Maisel. I feel like this totally, you know, was a proof of concept. It was great. Why is this not going straight to series? Like, after you got the script and, you know, you casted Tony Shalhoub, are you serious? Like, that's amazing. He should have it should be straight to series. That was my issue with Amazon.
Right, yeah. Hmm. Well, I enjoyed the show.
Yeah.
And I had heard about this pilot system that they had going on, but I never tuned in because I don't have Amazon Prime, so I said, well, I'll never be able to watch them anyway. But that's changing, so I'm like, now I'm a little more open-minded to it. It's just interesting how I feel like, the at least in my world, the Amazon series don't get the buzz that the Netflix ones do.
Yeah.
There's disconnect there. Same thing with the Hulu series.
But they're doing... Hulu has some great original content, too.
I just don't hear about them. Like, I know of The Path because we work at NBC.
Right.
But I mean, we
look at the poster every day.
Yeah, exactly. But that's about it. I couldn't name it. Like,
Shut Eye.
I never heard of that one.
Okay, you need to watch Shut Eye. It's Hulu Plus, so you have to have that account. But it's kind of... I describe it as, like, a Breaking Bad... but for this ring of psychics instead in LA. It's so cool.
Oh,
it's really
I'm
fun.
I'm interested in
yeah,
that.
See, that's a great pitch. So it's
okay,
like,
yes.
It just replace the drug side of Breaking Bad with a psychic side led by the Romani people in this underground, super seedy psychic, you know, society. It's wow. so cool.
What
though.
Is this called in Shut-Eye?
Shut-Eye. Everyone okay. needs to watch it. It got picked up for season 2.
Okay, so it's encouraging. So, yeah.
Totally.
So it's worth getting into.
Yeah, hour long, super great. Great yeah. acting, great casting. Everything's really good about it. So I feel like these streaming services are trying to brand themselves a little bit differently than the networks. One, because they have to. And two, because I feel like when you're so based in the tech industry, I don't know if there's this superiority complex where it's like, well, we don't need to deal with that aspect of the movie industry or the TV industry. We'll do this side of it because we mm-hmm. have money. Like Amazon has a ton of money from their consumer products to fund, you know, all their shows yeah. and stuff. So they don't really have to worry about appealing to people mm-hmm. as much. They're like, we got money. We're solid.
Right, yeah.
I don't know Hulu's as much, but I know Amazon is just, like, loaded.
Yeah, I've heard it. I've said it on this show. They don't even need really necessarily budgets in place. They just shoot it, whatever it costs.
Great.
It's, like, unbelievable cool. for a content creator. I mean, who wouldn't want to have a golden ticket?
I would love that.
Yeah.
No budget.
Yeah, you know what show I'm really enjoying on a side note?
Mm-hmm.
Feud, Betty and John.
I know. I need to watch that because it has the girl from Mad Men, the daughter.
The daughter.
Sally
yeah.
Draper. What's the actress's name?
She plays BD in the show. I don't know.
She has a very cool name, too. It's like anyway.
It's that show is so entertaining. I'm savoring the episodes. I've been trying to tell people that uh-huh. haven't watched yet to look it up. It's will air, you know, I believe it's on episode 6 out of 8 coming
yeah.
up as of the time we record the show. And I'm just so enjoying it. I mean, Jessica mm-hmm. Lange is a fantastic oh. actress to watch.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Susan Sarandon is good as well. But I really just like watching Jessica Lange act. Certain actresses that I really enjoy, watching them do their job.
Yeah.
You know, like seeing how they interpret these. And these are real people, too.
Right.
So it's not like they're like taking on a character. They're taking on like a legend. You know,
yeah.
very complicated people. Those actresses were very complicated, toughest nails women.
Yeah.
So to see them, you know, see them as a mother, as mm-hmm. you know, negotiator, like you know, as an actress, vulnerable to the men of the business. It's so well done.
Yeah, women are complicated, and it doesn't get shown on TV a lot. So when you have something like this, it's like, whoa, that's great. Let's do more of that, you know, everywhere
yeah.
else. And I was reading this article kind of about, it wasn't directly about Feud, but it was similar. It was an interview with an agent from William Morris Endeavor, and she was talking about, you know, someone asked, what do your clients all want to be in? Like, what shows are they asking you to get them on? And she said, anything Ryan Murphy. You know,
wow.
like all the, you know, a little bit older actresses want to be on a Ryan Murphy show because he writes intelligent, complicated, layered women really well. And, you know, they all want to do it. So.
Yeah, that's true. Like, just thinking about, like, Scream Queens with
yeah.
all those older, you know, not, I want to say older, but, you know, I mean, like, who haven't we seen in
mature
a while?
Mature actresses.
Yes. the Scientologist one. Like, I can't think of her name from Cheers, but, you know, I'm talking
She's
about.
She's Scientologist?
Yeah, like Christy Alley, yeah.
Oh, yeah, she is. She
yeah.
is. Okay.
Yeah, and even Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah,
and
not Scientologist.
No, she's not, as far as I know.
No.
But yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I have like never thought about it like that, but really, that's where to go if you're an actress 50 plus, I guess.
Yeah, right
or
now at
there.
Least.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's going to be offshoots of this soon, just because,
yeah.
like, anytime a show's successful, you have a bunch of spinoffs. Not,
right.
you know, not related, but it's like a bunch of different shows that are kind of copycatting it. So, I mean, that could be a great thing.
Yeah.
To have just more women parts.
Right. Interesting. In Feud,
mm-hmm.
they're having this whole story arc about this woman who wrote a script. She's been an assistant director, and now she wants to be the director.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many limitations
yeah.
on this. And it's not that far from the conversation we were having earlier about Amazon.
Yeah.
About Jill, correct?
Jill Soloway, yeah.
Yeah, her show that, you know, she has one successful show on Amazon already.
Yeah.
And she can't get a second one picked up.
Yeah.
Or greenlit.
Yeah.
So, the more we change, the more we stay the same.
Sexism is still alive.
Yes. But let's talk about you and
okay,
let's
cool.
talk about this program that you're in, the NBC Page program,
mm-hmm.
you know, alumni myself,
yeah.
like, changed my life, got me to where I am today.
Yeah.
I've been reaping the benefits of having that experience for many years, as
mm-hmm.
will you. And, you know, tell me where you currently are. What is development?
So I'm in Universal Television Development, and we, like some of our shows that are currently on are Mindy Project, Master of None, The Path. The Good Place, which is like my favorite. The new Will and Grace is like our department that we're. So those are just some of them that
that's exciting.
Super excited for. And we read scripts all day essentially. So there's a couple different departments in our office. We have casting that does, you know, all the casting. And then we have current, which handles all the production issues, the new scripts coming in for the writer's room. And then we have drama and comedy development. And those are handling the incoming scripts. And we have a bunch that we're assigned to read every week. Like everyone in the department kind of splits it up. So drama helps with comedy sometimes. Comedy helps with drama. But we mainly stick with our own departments. And I'm essentially an office manager who gets to sometimes help out with comedy and drama and kind of see and shadow what they're doing. It's really interesting. I love reading and, you know, I want to do TV writing. So it's great to see, you know, what scripts work, what scripts don't, what do you want, what's there too much of on television right now. And I'm just learning so much. I love it. I can't talk enough about the program.
That's a fantastic assignment to start out with.
Yes.
I mean, that's the making of a hit show. Really, you're at the ground level of that and seeing these scripts come in for the first time.
Yeah.
That, you know, when you move on from that position, those could be the number one show on TV.
Oh, totally, totally.
You know, it's unbelievable.
And
yeah.
It's cool to just, you know, be able to see, you know, new scripts coming in for all these shows I love. And it's frustrating. I can't talk about any of them with anyone else besides the people in the department. But it's just the most exciting thing to me. For anyone who loves TV, it's like thrilling to be on development. If you like to read, I guess.
Yeah.
If you don't like to read, don't do it. But I love it. I love it so much.
Do you have to do breakdowns?
No.
Oh, that's good. That's helpful.
No.
Oh, I've had to do a couple, like, test runs for, like, different job interviews. And it would take me forever, obviously, because you want to turn in a good breakdown.
Right.
And then, you know, you go, you submit it, you never even hear if you ever write an interview again. It's so much work. So those are the days that I don't miss.
I've had to do some coverage, but it's mainly, you know, submissions that we get. And it's very similar to what you do as an intern in development, which is you do coverage on this. You say if they're a good writer, bad writer, you know. Should we consider them for another thing? You know, it's a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I've only been there like 3 weeks. Yeah. So they've been throwing me a lot of information. And I think slowly they're giving me more and more to do, which is amazing. Because it's just the coolest thing to me to do development.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting that they give a lot of these companies, not necessarily calling out NBC, but in general, they'll have interns look at these scripts and do coverage.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got someone who's, like, you know, written, like, their whole life. And, like, you know, they've got a script in front of NBC and it's, like, they're not getting to really a notable person right away.
Yeah.
You know, it's, like, someone who's, like, fresh out of school. Not necessarily you, but in general.
Well, I am fresh out of school.
And people who are in school currently as, again, an unpaid internship. And these are the ones that are the gatekeepers.
But how much weight do we really have? Like, I was an intern at Fox 2000 last summer, and I read this script for Hidden Figures, and I was like, this is the best script ever. We need to, you know, go forward with this. I wrote, like, the most glowing coverage I've ever written on, and they're like, oh, yeah, we're already doing it. We just want to see what you thought of it. And I was like, oh, cool. Is that what you did the whole time? No, but it was kind of a test, but, I mean, they gave me other ones, too, I think, just to say, you know, we're not going forward with this because of this, and we want you to understand why, and your coverage reflected that, or it didn't, and it was a great learning
experience. I wish I had an experience like that. I always was just thrown a script and said, do coverage. So that, like, would teach you where things are weak and where things are strong.
Totally.
That's great.
I mean, it depends where you intern to. Not every internship was, you know, as kind as mine, but our office at Fox was, like, pretty much all women. And a lot of them I was, you know, friendly or friends with, and they would explain to me, you know, this didn't work because of this. Do you understand why? And it was really
wonderful.
Great.
Yeah.
You know,
that's,
be friends with your supervisors because they'll help you a lot.
Yeah, that's, you know, what's so great about that is you'll never learn that in a classroom. I mean, that is strictly by
100%.
Doing. 100%. And look how it's helped you now.
Yeah. I think everyone should do a development internship just so you know why things are greenlit or why things aren't. You know, if you can understand. I mean, internships are short, but in a couple months you should have kind of a, you know, semblance of why things are picked up or not.
Some of my best memories and experience has been through internships, because the pressure was off in certain ways. You know, whether they love you or hate you, you're out in 4 months. So I learned so much through that. I never was really on a development side at a network as I was on production companies. The sellers, not the buyers.
Right, right.
And, the sellers, they think everything they're putting out there is great. And I'm kind of looking at some of this stuff. I'm like, you're going to go in front of a network executive with this? Or with this, sizzle reel filled with footage you ripped from the internet? You know what I mean?
What was your favorite internship you did?
Oh, well, my first one ever was on The Bold and the Beautiful, which was just great for me. Oh, my God. Because I watched that show.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I had ever walked onto a set, a working facility.
Cool.
You know, they had the production offices upstairs and then down the hall and through the elevator and all that was the stage. So it was all in-house. It was like a factory.
That's so fun. On a soap.
Yeah. So you would hear, the writers on the phone talking about scripts that were shooting next month, and then you follow that script through production, through editing. I got to follow these episodes and sit in the booth, and the phone would ring and they'd be like, what line item are we on? Stuff like that was so exciting because it was all so fresh and new.
Yeah.
And I got to really see a boot camp style way of how a TV show was made.
My first internship was a set PA on an Adult Swim show, Tim and Eric's Bedtime Stories, and that was just a crash course. And
I bet.
Here's how TV's made, enjoy. And it was wild, and the days were so long, but you do see it's so much hard work, and it's it's not always fun, but it's very rewarding at the end of it. You have this really funny or really interesting show.
I walk by the sound stages at Universal and I see the sets put up, and that's so exciting. I would do anything to be able to freely walk in and check things out and see what they're shooting and how many scenes they're doing that day. And I'm not going to do that, obviously, because it's not a good look, but that is so exciting to me. And then I think about it, and I'm like, well, those guys are in there. They're starting at 5 a.m. They're doing a 15-hour day. And that's one day.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to go back for the next 5 or 6. It's that's just a lifestyle I know I can't keep up. As exciting as it is, I just can't live that production lifestyle. I tried, did it for a while.
Yeah.
And really, I made no money, and I was no happier for it. But,
it takes a certain type of person to have that, physical... labor side of them, because it is physical. You're moving sandbags and lights and all that stuff, depending on which department you're in. But some people love it, and they just can't. They're just like, I can't do anything else. I love it so much, and if there was something else, I'd love to do it, but I can't.
I knew it wasn't for me when the very first show I PA'd on was The Bad Girls Club, and I talk about all the time. Yeah, that show was a disaster, but and we had to go out. It wasn't even the real one. It was Love Games. It was they had to find men or something.
Perfect.
Cheered men or something ridiculous, but we were out in Agoura Hills at this house in this long driveway that was just crushed stone. It was the heat of the summer, not a stick for shade. And we had to put up these rent-a-tents, those pop-up tents.
Yeah.
And I remember we had to take out the tents, and then we had to take out the sandbags to secure them.
Oh.
And it was so hot, and I was just like, I really don't want to do this. And then they rolled in these porta potties, also in the middle of the sun, with people going to the bathroom in them, which was disgusting. And then they were like, Grant, you need to go in there. Just tidy it up. Just make it smell good. Just make it look good. And I'm like, I really don't want to do this.
The comforting thing is, so many people have to do this.
I know.
To get, move up the ladder. Yeah.
And that's how I knew it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
I just knew it.
You can do a different path and, go up. But it's PA, being a set PA is crazy hard.
Yeah.
So, and you're at the bottom, and it's it's crazy that the bottom is the hardest part.
Yeah, and you're so disposable that if you make one small mistake, forget it.
We'll get in another person here to do your job. They'd love to do
they'd
your
love,
job.
Yeah,
they'd love to clean this porta potty in summer.
Yeah. So it's so hard. You can be as ambitious as you want, and then you just look naive if you're I'm so smart with all this and I know all this. But, then you're literally carrying a bag full of trash.
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to love it. You're supposed to be grateful to do that.
I mean, Hollywood is a marathon. Doing that is just not even at the start line. That's before. That's your warm up to it's.
And that's how I knew production life was not for me.
No, I mean,
I just didn't want to do that.
There's the other side of it too, which is equally as important, the business side of it.
Know. Yeah, and that's where I've really been able to shine and make money and enjoy life.
Yeah.
And be able to actually live. I mean, that production life is your lifestyle.
I know.
I wanted more than that for myself.
Yeah.
So what is Logan Everett?
Logan Everett is...
Or who?
Who is he? So the character Logan Everett is the first male American girl doll. So he's American boy doll.
Okay.
You know, like all those stories like Samantha in the 40s, you know?
Yeah.
So one of the girls in our group, Fiona, she went to the American girl doll store for her birthday because you can like have tea there, and we thought it was so funny, and she was saying how, you know, there's the first ever American boy doll, and so we're like, what's his name? And he looked so douchey. he had like a shirt that says play loud, and he has like a guitar and drums, and like he's in a band from Nashville or something. So bizarre. And everyone in the group was just like obsessed with this doll, and I was very hesitant to make that our name because we'd have to explain to everyone this whole long backstory.
Right.
Okay, he's the first American boy doll. Like,
and it's the name of your improv.
It's the name group. Of our improv group, yes. So that's who Logan Everett is. And we all met at UCB in Paul Welsh's 201 class. And we started a practice group. And then we were like, hey, maybe we should perform because this is really fun. And we gel well with each other.
That's great.
Yeah, and so we started performing at the clubhouse. We have our third show Monday night at 10:30. So that should be really fun. And we've been doing about one a week, which is nice and consistent. And it seems like it's picking up a little bit. And I love it so much.
That's great, it's a
nice like way to escape, not escape, but like, as adults, we don't really play. Like, kids play, you know, every day, and we don't really do that. And so improv is a nice way to, you know, not think, and you can't make any mistakes, which is the total opposite of working in the industry. Like, you can always make mistakes, even right. things that aren't really mistakes. Like, you didn't close the door yeah. today, or, like, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, improv, there are no errors. It's just have fun. And, I mean, there are obviously improv rules that you need to kind of follow a little bit, like right. saying yes yeah. to your partner.
Yeah.
But it's really fun. I love improv so much, and a lot of the podcasts I listen to are very improv-based. So, yeah, that's what Logan Everett is. Come to our shows, the clubhouse.
Nice. Where is the clubhouse?
It's Hollywood proper. It's it's kind of funny. It's really hidden. It's in this like strip mall.
Oh really?
Yeah, in Hollywood. It's great though. I love it so much. It's like a black box.
It's very Hollywood though.
It's so like, Hollywood. Yeah. It's hidden. You know, it's like a Stefan thing. It's in the back of this like t-shirt factory and then yeah. you know. But yeah, it's great. I encourage everyone to do it if you if you can and you yeah. can afford it. It's pricey, but there are ways around the prices.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you mentioned your love for podcasts. I know we talked about that when we worked together in the same office.
Yeah.
What are you listening to?
Okay, I have a bunch. But the first one, I started listening to this a few years ago, and that's what got me into more podcasts. That was Gilmore Guys, which is these two hilarious guys talking about Gilmore Girls for hours. As you can tell, I love Amy Sherman Palladino. Yeah. But they had, you know, really funny improv people on their show. And then I started looking up those improv people. And this was before I took improv at UCB. And I was like, oh, they all teach at UCB. What's that? And so that kind of got me into that. And it got me into other podcasts, like How Did This Get Made? And it got me into the writer's panel. And what else do I like? WTF with Mark Maron, obviously, because he's the king.
Yeah.
But, you know, just a lot of, like, industry podcasts I like to listen to. Script Notes is really fun. And then more, not that you could call them artsy, but they're in the arts section of the podcast. Mm-hmm. The Moth is really fun to listen to, where it's just people tell, like, very detailed story. Yeah. And then, obviously, Night Vale is super fun. The Thrilling Adventure Hour is great, too. Mm-hmm.
I listened to this one podcast called Heavyweight on Gimlet Media, and it's about this one guy who is pretty involved with his friends to a point where like he goes back in time with them to something that set them off or something that changed things with them, like an ex, and you never knew what went wrong, or someone who bullied you and they wanted to talk to you at some point and you ran away. What was that conversation going to be like? And they go back and they reach out to these people. And it's very interesting.
What's it called?
It's called Heavyweight.
Heavyweight. That's really cool.
Some of these are about him, though, and it's very, like, pretentious. And some of them, I wouldn't say, I don't know if that's the correct word, but some of them I'm, like, a little bit, like, all right, it's, like, we get it, like, You know, it's very much about him mm-hmm. and, like, where he's coming from. Well, I like to see the ones that where he's working with other people to get to the bottom of
That's
these situations. Yeah, it's a little bit too heavy about the host, in my opinion. But, I mean, I think that show is just so well done, and it's, like, really art for the ears. I mean, they've got, you know, so many great things to listen to in music and pacing mm-hmm. and just well-done production.
Yeah, I like all the, you know, real-life stuff, too. I think that's why I like The Moth. You know, it's yeah. just so interesting to be let into all these strangers' lives and hear about them and how relatable every story is. And, you know, we're all the same. So yeah, it's great.
It's great. You know, it's worldwide. Yeah, absolutely.
Also, Call Chelsea Peretti is a great podcast. I love her. She's a really funny
comedian. We'll have to look that one up.
Yeah. She puts this phone number for, like, fans to call, and she'll just have weird conversations with them or, like, yell. And it's so good. Oh, wow. I love it. Yeah. So she hasn't made a new one in a while, but it's you should listen to, like, all the backlog of it.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
really great.
Check it out. I'm always looking for things to listen to when I walk on lunch or something like that.
Yeah.
So what would you like to promote? And are you on social media?
I am. Uh-huh. I'm at Isabel Carasso on Twitter. You don't need to follow me on Instagram. It's not interesting. And basically, the only thing I want to promote is Logan Everett, our improv group. If you're interested in improv or, you know, you have a team, come to the clubhouse and support other people. I think that's, like, very important to do when you're starting out is, even if you don't have a show, go support other people who are just starting out, too. I think that's super important. Mm-hmm. To have that, like, foundation of, you know, friends around you and just people that are doing similar things.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And you can like Logan Everett on Facebook
for more
information.
Yes, you will see the American Boy doll's face.
I was wondering what that was all about. Now I know.
I did invite you on Facebook. Yeah, that now you know. Now everyone knows exactly. what Logan Everett is. It's great.
Yes. Well, I want to thank all my listeners, especially for the really nice reviews and reaching out to me. There's been some great reviews, one from China, another from another fan who listens and really much enjoys the show over on iTunes. And I really appreciate those comments. The support for the show is great, and please keep it coming. There'll be more to come. The whole time I've been talking to Isabel, I've been keeping these papers, hiding the corner of my glass table here, because last night, I just have to tell this story. Ridiculous. I had a few people over, which was really a disaster. I mean, I don't know. I don't think if these people are going to be invited back, but I bought a handle of tequila, you know, just like as one would.
Yeah.
So I had it in a bag over my shoulder, and I came into my apartment to walk around the table to open up a window, and it tapped the side of this table. And it's a wooden table with a glass top. And it hit the corner just right where it shattered the table and took out a chunk of glass. Look at it. And so
oh, my God.
Isn't that weird?
That's very upsetting.
It's very upsetting. So now I have to go and buy a whole new glass top for this table because I'm not going to live like this.
Did the tequila break?
No.
That was my main concern. I thought the tequila was going to just shatter.
Well, I heard it make contact. I opened the window and then I heard this big piece of glass. So I thought it was the tequila that cut through the bag or something. I'm like, I don't know how the hell that happens. But no, then I saw like half my table on the floor
from
just tapping the thing. So I'm just telling this story because this is just typical. Unbelievable. So now I gotta buy a whole new damn tabletop.
You just get like, you know, what's it called? Tablecloth? Just get a tablecloth.
No, this apartment has been like Chateau Charest. It's taken so long to put together. And so I just feel like at this point, like, I'm done. And I just want it to look really good for the time being. And I just really want it. So I just, at this point, I'm going to get it so I can move on.
Yeah.
You know, so we shall see. But thank you for chatting with me about all these topics. I feel like we had a great Hollywood talk.
We did. We had a great Hollywood talk.
We did. We talked a lot about stuff. We're going to keep an eye on this WGA.
Yes.
And Abby Lee. What's going to happen to Abby Lee Miller?
I love her. I hate her. I'm obsessed.
And Mrs. Maisel. We have to see if this gets picked up, which it obviously should.
Yeah, it
Come
should.
Come on.
Yeah.
So we'll keep up with you. And we'll keep up with Logan Everett.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Yeah. There'll be more ranting to come. I love you for listening.
This has been Grant's Rants. Follow us on Twitter at Grant's_Rants. Cover art created by Howie Rone. Voiceover by Blake V. Media. Original theme music composed by Alexander Arntzen.